All right, Gary, what are we playing this week?
Shut the door.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's really squeaky. Should probably oil that.
No, well, I mean, well, okay. Well, hand me that that canister over there that says human oil.
Okay, is this made of or for? You know what? Okay, here you go.
It's both. All right, so I've oiled the door. And then step over this this human rug.
I'm uncomfortable with this whole affair.
I said step over it, not step on it.
Not dance on it. Okay. All right.
Let's head over here to the slab, where you will see my abattoir. Here you see here's a guy hanging on chains.
You say avatar?
come over here where we will watch Avatar.
No,
I haven't seen that, but it looks like the worst. God, does that movie look ugly? I saw something recently, like some trailer for it, and then. So as you came at kind of a bad time, I'm elbow deep in this guy's gut hole. I'm trying to get him to come back to life.
You're cleaning him like a turkey. That's weird.
Well, I feel like, I'm going through these list of theories about how to bring people back to life, and right now I'm thinking that you can't come back to life with organs.
Okay. No, you have to long live the new flesh, by which I mean not very much flesh at all.
One thing in the Egyptians, you know, they used to take out your organs so you could live, you know, eternal and ride shiny and chrome in Valhalla, something like that.
Right.
So, like, I'm taking out, you know, all this stuff, and I found something weird in here. And the reason why you're here is because you got those little tiny little baby arms, so you can reach all into this guy's xiphoid process and grab this thing I can't quite get out.
I don't know that I agree with this picture of your painting of me.
I've got big beef pecs. Like, you know how, right? You know, me and I got beef pecs, and I've got big forearms like Strong Boy, and you've got little tiny.
I'm basically Chris Elliott in Scary Movie 2.
Yeah, you are the olive oil to my Popeye, and I need you to reach into the xiphoid process and shut the fuck up. So grab this mysterious object with your little tiny man hands.
Okay, all right. Oh man, it's still warm.
Yeah, well, it's actually, I've got him hooked up to a heating pad because my wristies get cold.
Okay.
I don't like working in cold.
Okay, so
flesh.
I found something. Here's, let me pull it out.
It's a jewel case.
Huh. Okay. Let me open the.
Now there's a bunch of subcutaneous something on there. Let's brush that off.
Okay.
Okay.
You really delight in making these hard for me to edit, don't you?
Yeah. Just search on Freesound subcutaneous.
Subcutaneous something.
Okay. Let me sluice off this. The sluice is loose.
Okay.
And we got shake off. Nightmare creatures.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah. This let's talk about it.
Okay.
It's pretty good. I'm Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
This is After Suffering, the show where we play the games that you suggest so you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you doing this to us?
Yeah. Well, what do we do to deserve the honor?
Sarcastic.
Yeah.
Who suggested this, Cole?
So this was suggested by Lotus Grammarai. And it was. I think that might be a Phoenix Wright reference, possibly.
Okay.
If it's not, I'm sorry for saying your name was a reference, but it is a cool handle if it is a handle, and a cooler name if it is a name. This person said it's Bloodborne, but for PlayStation.
Yeah, kinda.
Yep.
It has some Bloodborne elements to it,
mm-hmm.
which I appreciate as a Bloodborne enthusiast.
Yeah.
Despite what you might read about, but like it is, I do like Bloodborne. And I like this game.
Are people really out there saying that you don't like Bloodborne?
Every once in a while, like somebody will be like,
"You get
so
defensive about that."
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like, "Oh, you're so down on it." It's like, "Oh, I'm really so down on it."
Yeah.
Like, I think the record shows I'm pretty up on it. It is like anybody who doesn't say it's the best one in the series is down.
Oh
on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just it has to be that.
It's a law of extremes. Yeah.
Exactly.
Huh.
So I mean, that's the thing with podcasting. Or is like talking to. I can't remember who on Twitter mentioned it, but it's like you on a podcast, you say something and then that opinion just gets like magnified 1,000 times.
Oh yeah.
So people are like, "Oh, like, you know, those guys hated that thing." And I'm like, it doesn't actually bother me, but like somebody was like, "Oh man, Gary and Cole hated Morrowind." I was like, didn't we really hate Morrowind? Or did we like complain about some of the quests but talked a lot of sugar about it other than that?
No, we just said a thing about it in a room or with a microphone in a room. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like we either hate or love. You know, and it's like, well, maybe it's maybe that's not the case. And same thing with this. Like I neither hate nor, but I can't say I love it either. But it is like a way better game than I remember.
Yeah. So a trap that I don't want to fall into with this show in general is I don't want to be lazy and say that anything on the PlayStation is bad just because it's awkward. Right? Like this
is subtweeting me about Mega Man Legends.
Definitely not. This is more about like Rascal kind of thing. Like Rascal, Rascal is really bad. But I kind of wonder.
This is awkward, but this is 1,000 times more playable than Rascal.
Right, right.
Like there's levels of articulation there that are not not being accounted for in your premise.
Right. Yes. So this is actually a good game. And I just want to make sure that we are talking about this because it is a weird oddity that we probably wouldn't cover on WoF because neither of us have experience with it and there might not be enough there for it, as opposed to like, hey, this is weird because it's 32-bit and so let's put it here.
Oh, I mean, I don't think anyone's under that assumption. I would be hard for me to imagine the user that is thinking that. I think what is more likely, I think that this game, because when this came out, it was not well liked. Like, this is not a really well liked game. I didn't like it when it came out, but I was playing it wrong because it came out kind of aping some aesthetics and looking like, and at the height of like Resident Evil time. So, which Resident Evil doesn't control, like it controls awkwardly, but it's to a purpose. And like that never bothered me. Like I was always into it. And this, this is a good game. We couldn't do a Bonfireside Chat or a WoF on it because it turns into absolute utter bullshit later. And even like early on, like it's not tight enough really to play.
Right.
You know, like but their ideas here are really here. Like it's like if I would have taken this on its own terms, I would have been way into it.
Yeah.
And I just didn't. At the time it came out, so like I did have experience with this. Like I played this, you know, with some regularity. Like kept trying this, but never got very far in it. And up until we replayed it for the show, I thought like, oh, I don't like that game. That's a terrible game.
Yeah. So
it's
like,
not. I just hadn't revisited.
So this is a horror game. You know, specifically like a gothic Victorian horror. Like that's where a lot of the Bloodborne comparison comes from, that and the fact that you're mostly fighting like werewolves or people who are on their way to being different flavors of werewolf. But like hitching on to the, you know, to the Resident Evil star, like I always get confused when people call Resident Evil an action game. Or say like, oh, like this is like an action movie, like just because it's like the things that are interesting to me about that are not anything that makes it like, you know, actiony, right? But like this is closer actually, and if we had this vocabulary, like it would have been much more successful. This is closer to like a character action game, like a Devil May Cry,
sure,
a little bit.
It's like a not quite tight enough.
It's Devil May Cry. It's like Devil May Cry with full 3D environments and semi-tank controls, but like not even really. Like it's tank controls, but it really relies on you strafing.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason what makes it not, you know, like the proto Bloodborne that we all want it to be is the fact that like enemies have a lot of bullshit attacks that are really hard to dodge. Everything can get stunlocked. Like there's like everything has zero poise.
Right.
So, which is kind of a Bloodborne thing anyway, but like if you just, once you hit an enemy, then that's it. You'll just keep hitting them. Once they hit you, they're very likely to keep hitting you. So it's like, it doesn't quite have that going for it.
Yeah.
You know, like there's not enough nuance there.
It has a really bad relationship with death too, or like it handles player death in a really bad way, which is like there are lives, which is very strange.
For a game that's challenging, because this is part of the reason I'm sure I didn't like it when I was young is because it's very hard.
Right.
And I just like couldn't handle that. You know, I wasn't ready for that. And that's a weird thing to say because like I played Kingsfield, like the first like PlayStation Kingsfield. And,
no, you're
and
on the record that. Of that being your favorite game of that year.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember if that's true, but I really like Kingsfield. Like even then I liked it, you know? So it's like, and that game is really hard too. It's just, I guess somebody could probably draw a line between me just liking Dark Souls and the fact that I'm constantly slagging off about Bloodborne to the fact that I like Kingsfield and I'm going to slag off a little bit on Nightmare Creatures. Because it is a pace thing, But I think that I'm more right with this, where like this game has a hard time matching that pace. Like the other thing it does is you're often fighting multiple enemies at the same time.
Yeah.
And the game gives you no real vocabulary for that.
Yeah. So like, you can't alter your lock on. You just kind of lock on to whatever's closest to you.
Yeah. And if something hits you from behind, you're going to go into a stun animation, and then the thing in front of you is going to hit you. And mm-hmm. enemies do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Like it is deadly right off the top.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, Bloodborne kind of carries that, you know, it's a Souls game. So it's going to be like kind of denser with incident than this is. Like, this is very much like it's closer. Like, did you play the PS2 Shinobi game?
No.
That's like a character action game mixed with like a beat 'em up kind of thing. Like, it's a little bit more technically demanding than a beat 'em up would be. But it's very much like you are running through hallways and you're in big rooms.
Yeah,
fighting a bunch of people. Yeah.
There's tons of hidden shit, though. Like, mm-hmm. it's discrete levels, but there are so many, like, cool hidden things, like, mm-hmm. which it has that from Souls games, too, where, like, if you see a suspicious-looking door, you might be able to blast it open mm-hmm. with your straight-out-of-Bloodborne gun and find hidden stuff in there. Like, and the game seems like it's balanced for that stuff. Like, you need to be looking around, similar to Souls. But it's just all these weird little, like, beat-em-up tropes that stop it from being kind of, like, right.
Yeah,
a lot of times you have to kill all the enemies before a switch will appear, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it gets repetitive really quickly. And granted, I only played two levels of this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, it gets bullshit hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know that from playing it this time and playing it when I was younger and then watching some YouTubes and stuff. It gets real nonsense.
Yeah.
But it's super cool. Mm-hmm. Like it is that kind of Victorian horror. It actually takes place in actual London, as opposed to you know, a fakey version of it. And it opens with this cinematic that's like really dark and great.
I love this cinematic. It's so good.
It's really, really good. Yeah. It's not Aleister Crowley. What's his name?
Adam Crowley is the
villain. I was watching YouTubes. I didn't notice this when I was younger or this playthrough. Do you know that guy stalks you throughout the game?
Holy shit! Really?
Yeah, like if you turn corners fast enough, you'll see him, and he runs away before you can catch up with him.
Oh,
and
man.
You can find him on other sides of rivers and stuff, watching.
It's like the G-Man.
Yeah, yeah. More or less through like the YouTube I watched, like, showed several different appearances of him, and I'm like, that's so good.
Wow,
like that's really, really cool.
Like he's taunting you because you're trying to kill him to stop the plague of nightmare creatures.
Yes, of nightmare creatures. Yeah. You think the lack of success of this game has anything to do with its ridiculous third grader name?
Like, I can really see this being like drawn on the outside of a composition book.
Yeah. such a stupid name. Like, if this was your favorite game, like, you'd be, oh yeah, my favorite game is Nightmare Creatures. It just sounds so dumb.
Is that I don't know. Resident Evil's a fucking dumb name too.
I think Resident Evil is an evocative.
Huh.
Like, oh, you can't go down to that community center. There's a Resident Evil. You know, like, it just like it's. It's not like using toddler words.
Yeah,
you know, like, it has like a sophistication to it. Creature is so non-specific.
Yeah, like creature sounds like clinical to me.
Yeah.
Like oh, we cannot define this there, ergo it must be some kind of creature.
You yeah.
know, like that is the standard we're going to use until we find the taxonomy.
As you move around in this game, you also gain new combos and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is pretty rad.
I dug this. Like, I really loved it. Yeah. I liked the way that that even just basic combat articulated between like normal attacks and strong attacks.
Yeah.
Like, I was stringing together combos, and the fact that you kind of lock on and you have these tank controls, that's actually used to really good effect, because your movement is always relative to where you're looking.
Yes.
It really lends well to navigating in circles around the enemies.
Yeah. Yeah. It plays better than I remembered it, and better than you would think.
Yeah.
You know, and is consistently pretty fun. Like, I might try a run of this with, you know, and abuse save states
mm-hmm.
just to kind of get through it and see some of the later shit.
I mean, it's on the hex crank list, so I'll get to it in 2030.
Oh yeah. 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 Cause yeah, it is it's cooler than you think. It's mm-hmm. cooler than I used to think it was. It is definitely kind of a cooler game. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting that, like, it's going back and in my mind and thinking, like, oh, I definitely bounced off this because I wanted to control more like Resident Evil.
Hmm.
Like, I don't think I could ever, like, I could articulate it then, but, like, I really loved how Resident Evil controlled,
yeah.
which is, like, people hated, but I remember just really liking it.
So I think that it actually works against, the fact that this is in full 3D works against it for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like full 3D Resident Evil games, like when they went to Code Veronica, like that's fine, but they still had like fixed camera angles.
Yeah.
Except when they followed you. And that's mostly the case in like Silent Hill as well. Like the fact that it's full 3D is mostly so you can like look down hallways and see the fact that your, flashlight isn't really doing much against the darkness,
mm-hmm.
you know, like. Here, because you know you are in these kind of like relatively big environments, you can't, and because of what kind of game this is, it couldn't be like straight up tank controls, but like in the context of what Resident Evil is, like it's kind of perfect. And yeah. like when I've gone back and like replayed the HD remakes, like with one, and then I'm going to be dipping into Zero here. No, I don't want to hear it, but I'm going to dip into Zero again.
But I don't care if you do that. Like yeah. I don't say, and you're not asking me to do it.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to do that game for WoW, but that doesn't mean that I don't want you to play it at all.
Yeah, I just knew if I said Zero, it'd be a whole thing. Ugh. All the enemies are just giant animals.
I don't even know that's a complaint I have.
No, I don't know. Yeah,
like who are you projecting onto me?
I know you don't like that game, and
yeah, it's my least favorite. Where would it place on? It's my least favorite of the. I think it's my least favorite Resident Evil game that's not explicitly a Gaiden. So like Survivor.
So it's not like Gun Survivor.
Yeah,
it's pretty close to the bottom.
Yeah. Which one do you like less? I'm just curious. I'm not trying to bait you into a debate.
I think that it's probably. Let's say two notches below three for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
What, I mean, what is it? What is it? What's worse than it though?
Oh no. I don't know. Like it may be my least favorite.
Okay. I was just like curious. That... I was trying to think of, cause I can't, when I think of the other Resident Evils, like the closest thing I would say to like one that I would put, you know, below that. Would be, I mean, and we're not, I guess we're not talking about the modern ones. Cause
yeah.
Like,
so like, I would say five
is probably,
like,
yeah. Five like, or like, five.
I,
yeah.
I really don't like
six than five.
Yeah. So like six is fucking bonkers. Like five. Yeah. I really don't like that game very much.
It's
even when
that,
I played
like,
it like co-op,
yeah.
like it's,
yeah, I had fun with it, but it's probably my least favorite too.
Yeah. So
but zero might be up there too. Like yeah. as far as tank control ones, it's my least favorite tank control one.
Yeah. If modern ones are in play, then yeah. Yeah. Five is definitely below it. But like you have to understand, like this is a hell of a curve. Like it's a tank control yeah. Resident Evil, so I'm gonna have some affection for it in my heart. And I kind of think Marcus is pretty cool. Like the leech enemies are pretty creepy. like I like what they do with that. And also the fact that it overlaps with Resident Evil 2 in kind of unexpected ways is really, I don't know, like kind of fan servicey, but also pleasant to me.
Yeah, I guess like I don't think Rebecca Chambers holds a game, I guess.
No.
I don't think she's a very good protagonist.
Yeah. And what's his name? Billy is kind of a.
Yeah.
He's a little bit of a. What's the male equivalent of a Mary Sue? Like a Marty Stew or something?
Yeah, Marty Stew.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you didn't say three, because three is like something people like to shit on three, but three is great.
No, I love three a lot, but like yeah. it's just in terms of like. I don't like the story. I don't know. Yeah, so that's the thing. Like three, when I played it, it made less of an impact. But three is also pretty great because of the ammo stuff and because like the Nemesis system is legit one of the best things in the series.
Yeah, and the branching path stuff is great.
Yeah,
in three, like that's really really cool. Like the first time that happened, I was really blown away. Like, oh shit, what do mm-hmm. I do? And then the fact that doing nothing is an option.
Yep.
In a lot of the cases, like mm-hmm. that's really great too.
Yeah, and you can fight them if you want, like if you're up to it. Like yeah.
It's also that was the first game guide I ever read that was like, or not the first one, but around the same time I got I had this like string of good game guides where like I had the Legend of Zelda Link to the Past one that Zach Meston did,
mm-hmm.
and then another, and it might be even the same guy, but another person did like the Prima Resident Evil 3 guide, and there were lots of good jokes in them.
Oh,
like
cool.
I remember the Resident Evil 3 one has like a whole section on like Umbrella's other products that they advertise in the city. Like there are all these little sidebars that were just jokes.
Oh yeah.
And I remember thinking like, oh, this guy's great.
Well, 3 like, had all those, like you had like there were commercials for different
yeah,
Umbrella products.
AquaCure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
I love to think of AquaCure as just a big bottle full of that desiccant they put in shoes to make sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's just for treating, you know, third base dehydration at the league games. Like it's just a water bottle. It's like a little league coach in a can.
Just a sterile bag.
Yeah.
You have to rip it open. Yeah.
What were you saying before I tried to bait you into defending Resident Evil Zero?
No, I preempted you from baiting me into defending Resident Evil Zero.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. that's what you get. No, but like those add in like the Silent Hill 2 style, like you move in the direction that you press.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really unsatisfying to me.
Yeah.
Not least of which because like the scene transitions are never handled well, and you're still going to like run directly into something that is a threat. Like it doesn't solve the problem.
Well, and that's the thing with this game too, where like the kind of hook of this game as far as enemy placement, it's another thing that it doesn't quite have on Souls, is like it's all ambushes. Yeah. It's all the scene from the Chalice Dungeons where things pop out of coffins.
Yeah.
Like every once in a while there'll be a zombie there, but they're never really thoughtfully placed.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of enemies in this game is that they pop out of nowhere. You know, like bust out of things or statues come to life or what have you, which is cool for the time, but like gets exhausting.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this, and this is, you know, we can make jokes eventually in this episode. but the, you know, for Bloodborne or Bonfire Side Chat, when we keep talking about off seasons,
mm-hmm.
you know what we need to play that I keep forgetting to like make sure we play, is Blade of Darkness. Did you ever play Blade of Darkness?
No, I did not. Can you give me an elevator pitch on Blade of Darkness? Cause that sounds like a fucking crazy title too.
It is a PC game that was like a cult hit.
Oh, Severance. There we go. I was looking at our database. Yeah, and I saw let's put that in there.
Yeah. That plays very Soulsy. Hmm. And this kind of reminded me of that because it is also like a third person kind of thing.
Huh.
In the same way. And it has kind of similar blocky graphics and stuff, but that has tighter, cooler combat.
Mm-hmm.
Than this does, and there's all these like it has the same kind of thing that this has, where like limbs can get chopped off. So like enemies have like limb placement, and that's true in this game as well.
Yeah, I'm really in love with the idea. So I played as Nadia. I played as the woman character, and mm-hmm. does the guy have a kick attack?
Yes.
Okay. Well, at least Nadia, she can kick zombies in half.
Yeah, you know, he can hit them with a stick until they pop in half too. Like it's like they were already cut in half and somebody tried to balance them so nobody would notice.
like half you were house sitting for a friend and you broke their zombie.
Exactly. And you just like balance the top half on the bottom half and then just hope that they think they did it. You know, like zombie haunted house sitting.
It's that old haunted sitcom trope.
Yep. Yep. You go out and get them a zombie that looks roughly the same. Yeah.
Like, is Severance a game you could even get? Because I just looked it up on GOG and there's nothing.
I played it. I don't remember how.
I assure you.
No, I'm not just assuring you that it exists.
Yeah.
I think that it used to, I think it actually is called Blade of Darkness in America or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did play the GOG version.
Huh.
Yeah. Boy, this is riveting.
Yeah, so you,
yeah, it's
you
Blade of just... Darkness is the version in America. So that's the version you can get on GOG. And I think it's the same game.
Oh wow! I'm doing a search on GOG and there's nothing. That is literally less than interesting. So I will stop. I will stop doing this. But like does Blade like do they have like a is there a world that you explore? Is it stage by stage? Like what else makes it Soulsy aside from the fact that it's a third person like action RPG?
Is rhythm based, mm-hmm. like shield, you know, blocking and you know it's got the same kind of rhythm to combat. And it is has, you know, weird oppressive atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get very far in it. You start out in a castle. You're escaping from like a dungeon. Yeah. But it is oftentimes when people talk about Souls like games, it pops up all the time, and yet I always forget it when we are doing off seasons.
Mm, yeah.
So anywho, a little hidden. I mean, anybody who wasn't expecting a stealth Bonfire Side Chat in the Nightmare Creature episode after suffering, like I don't know. You know, God help you.
Yes. So sorry to disabuse you of the notion that we are not as predictable as possible.
Yes. Yeah. What's the worst nightmare you ever had, Cole?
My worst nightmare. You know, it's funny. I don't really remember my dreams. They're mostly just this is super interesting.
I'm transitioning our conversation about planning our off seasons in the future to talking about dreams in an effort to stop people from listening to the show.
No, I was about to say, like, I don't really think they're more just feelings that I get when I wake up. I'm like, oh, that's weird. And like, mm-hmm. I'm walking around buildings that I've been in before. And like, I don't know, like I have night terrors. I've talked about my night terrors before, right?
I think so. But talk about them more. I think you mentioned it offhand, but I don't think you've ever articulated it.
So like night terrors and sleep paralysis, it's it is something physiologically. When you are asleep, your brain does something that paralyzes your body, so that when you are in dream world, you know, playing the game of dreams, you're not acting them out. So if you are like running and chasing after what's her name, Annie from Community,
or Plump Rabbit. Look at him, he's dreaming.
Look at him, he's just chasing after Alison Brie, he wants her autograph.
Yeah.
I just gotta look at you some more, please. You're very attractive. So sometimes you will be awake and or like half awake, but your body still can't move, and because of that half like twilight dream state, you're still going to see things, but it's mapped over the real world. This started when I was in college, when I was real anxious. I lived in kind of a transitional neighborhood. I was real anxious about people breaking into the house. And so I would just wake up and, you know, I would see a shadowy figure standing in the corner of my room pointing a gun at me.
Super spooky.
Yep. And he wouldn't move, and I wouldn't move / couldn't move even if I tried. And then the dream would end when he pulled the trigger and I heard the bang. And then like all of a sudden, like you get that feeling like where you're falling in a dream, and then you're like, oh, you catch yourself and like, oh, wait a minute, that's totally not a thing. But like totally convinced of the illusion. Right. I occasionally have dreams where there are like night terrors or sleep paralysis things where there are spiders crawling on the ceiling. And I'm not even afraid of spiders. And this is usually combined with faces kind of like pushing out of the ceiling as though it was like elastic, and like screaming and moaning and stuff. Like just
the cover of The Beast Within.
Yeah. Except it's more like a bubbling or fractal kind of thing, where it's like big faces surrounded by smaller faces and stuff like that. An effervescence of agonized spirits, like reaching out and calling to me for help. But I can't do anything because my arms are pinned at my side.
Because there are spiders in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would reach out and help you, but like, boy, there's a big spider on your hand.
Ooh, boy. Surprised you can't feel it, dog. Like, I understand why you're screaming, because there are spiders there.
You're saying that like you saw the spiders and were scared of them, but you're not generally scared of spiders. Made me think like, there are probably people out there who are scared of, or aren't scared of spider, but they are scared of spiders. Like, if you have a congress of spiders, like two spiders together, like, that's scarier than one spider.
Well, you'll see those gifs of like the daddy long legs, or like all the spiders like huddled together for warmth, and their breathing and undulations just kind of multiply over top of each other, so it looks like it is a writhing carpet of spider, like on a cellar wall and stuff. What's scary about the spider thing isn't just the prevalence of them on the wall and ceilings, and the fact that I can see them in the dark, so there's some kind of implied bioluminescence. It's the idea that they are concentrated thickest over my body, as though I'm casting a shadow of spiders upward, and usually they are hanging from their back legs as though they're going to drop onto me.
Yeah, that's the thing about ceiling spiders.
Yeah,
it's like it's just like one little, like all they have to do is like fart and not expect to do it, and then they're gonna fall on you.
Yeah, they just got to make a whoopsie fart, and then it's all over.
Yeah it is.
So that's scary. Like it's super scary, but like my waking mind knows that this happens, so there's that small part of it that just like, you know, like when it first starts in your life, it's like, oh boy, I can't move and this really sucks and something terrible is happening. But now it's just kind of like, all right, the spiders are gonna go away, it'll be fine. But I can remember those because I'm half awake. Otherwise it's just me running down really dark hallways forever and ever.
Yeah.
And is that a satisfactory answer?
No, yeah, sure. I was just trying to talk about nightmares, because I think that like, so this is a weird inverse to the Faceball 2000 episode, where like that game we ran out of things to talk about because it's so boring, and this one we just kind of like enumerated what's good about it.
Yeah.
And then there's not that much that's funny about it or anything, though.
No.
It's not like, it's not a figure of fun. Like, I don't like, there's nothing to make fun of the game with. Like, it looks a little bit, you know, it's a little bit awkward and it looks a little bit Dorito-y because it's of the era, but it even looks kind of good. Like, this is a good execution on Dorito visuals.
Definitely. Like, this is the low fidelity aiding in the horror a little bit. Like, the monster designs kind of worked because like they're stretched in different ways. Like, this looks like contorted, you know, Uzumaki Ito, like the body is silly putty horror kind of stuff.
Yeah. So there's just not that much else to say about the actual game, which isn't a negative mark on the quality of it. the positive mark. It's like the sword cutting the other way as far as
I would recommend somebody try this, because like it surprised me how playable it was and like how engaging the combat was when I was not being like overwhelmed and then just losing all three lives because this fucking stone werewolf just doesn't know how to let up for one goddamn second.
That's really the thing. That's what's going to stop you. But I didn't stop because I was bored.
Right.
You know, which is like, that's the one of the marks of a good abject suffering game. Hmm. Not necessarily good, like makes a good episode as our dream talk and off season chat.
How about you? What's your worst nightmare?
Is it running
out of Tostitos? Like,
yeah, I want a pizza roll, but there's not. No, all my nightmares. I don't have monster nightmares anymore. If I have a nightmare, it's usually like something sad and personal.
Yeah.
I'll have nightmares about people who I like dying, and I'll have nightmares about ever since, and this is sad and personal, but whatever, I'm a vulnerable boy. Mm-hmm. Every time I've ever had all of my major relationships mm-hmm. and kind of evergreen, I've had dreams where like I'm back in that spot, mm-hmm. like back together with that person, and like everything's kind of great, and then I wake up and I'm super sad.
Oh yeah.
And in the dream, the thing that makes it a nightmare, because it's not like a happy dream, is that like I just feel bad like, during the whole thing. Like it's really nice, like this person's being very nice to me, and like mm-hmm. even my divorce, which is mutual, like I'm not responsible for that. Mm-hmm. I still, that will manifest itself as guilt.
Yeah.
In my dreams, mm-hmm. And then with the last relationship, hoo boy.
Yeah.
Like that's been, you know, that's been a real something that's been stomping around my subconscious for a long time. So
but yeah, like you'll just kind of like be transported back in time to this imaginary sun soaked situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but I still just know though, like I'm there, but then I also know that I watch out. It's like the same way I want to go back in time and worm Garfunkel. Like I just want to in this dream version, I think I just said warm, and I do want to go back in time and warm Garfunkel.
Give him a robe, like, hey Garfunkel, put on this hoodie.
Yeah, just run my fingers through whatever he calls hair, and like
you'll catch your death here.
Yeah, you want to warn Garfunkel because he's gonna have the worst time of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like everyone's gonna love Paul Simon, no one's gonna love Garfunkel. Like everyone's like, oh, he's that pretty voice that hung out with Paul Simon, America's greatest songsmith. It's that feeling where it's like I just feel that impending guilt of knowing something that people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I don't. That's a really stressful thing psychologically for everyone, but it's something that I feel really hard is keeping a secret from somebody. Like having something that they are acting in blissful ignorance of something that I know that could ruin them.
Is it like you want to tell them to run as fast as they can, or
more or less? Like I just want them to just like, boy, get away from me because I'm gonna fuck this up for you.
Yeah, like there are sad times that, well, it's funny because like the only reason that's any different than reality is because like that's explicitly in the past and it's not real. Like what you're feeling is like, oh, this is impermanent, like this is going to go bad, like most things often will. The best case scenario for any relationship is that one of you watches the other die. So you know, like, okay, if you walk it back from there, nothing is permanent, and you're just feeling it because you've already heard the punchline. Right?
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's also it's the other thing that makes it a nightmare is the like weird increased emotional stakes and lack of, you know, real waking logic
mm-hmm.
to it too, because the dream me, it's a very uncharitable read on myself. Like that's mm-hmm. actually, you know, none of those things I'm feeling in those emotional nightmares are actually mm-hmm. true. You know, like there's a lot more depth to those situations. And like I said, I have that feeling with my ex-wife, whereas that was like way more, you know, mutual mm-hmm. than other relationships that have ended. So like I tend to have like emotional nightmares.
Yeah.
You know, not to like, I'm not trying to be like, well, you're a base.
Your
base nightmare creatures can't compete with my sophisticated, the resident evil of splitting up a residence. Like,
no,
I'm not trying to do that. It just, that ends up being how I get scared and sad.
No, I know that's not what you're. I know that's not what you're saying. I know that's how you feel.
Like sad mares. Like it's not even like they're not scary. It's just like anxious.
Well, I have impotence mares too. Like when I do remember a dream, and I guess I lied before, but it's like, you know how if you're trying to climb the stairs, but you're like your legs can't work, like it just it's slow, and you're like crawling up, like and that's again because of the sleep paralysis thing. But like also like you can't talk. So like you're like I'll have these dreams where I'm like I'm in a conflict with somebody, like, and they're like giving it to me and like, oh, you just I'm like, yo, you piece of fucking garbage, like let me tell you everything that's wrong with you. But like I might as well be Neo from that scene where his mouth fleshes over.
Oh sure.
You know, like, and just like that's a horrible feeling, because like A, I'm averse to conflict, so I really don't like to have that to happen, but like B, I hate being interrupted, and one of my like biggest anxieties is not being able to talk if I have something to say.
Not being able to talk about something. I get you.
Yeah. That doesn't work so much with the lag.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. But it's like, oh no, if I can't express myself about this, like, you know, especially in a heightened emotion thing, like, you know, like, I want to get this up, but like it's like the weirdest case of like existential blue balls.
Yeah, well, that's what so many, you know, frustrations and miseries in life come down to not being able to communicate, right?
Yeah.
Like I think about, and this is a silly example, but I think about that animal song that like, please don't let me be misunderstood thing. And that's like that's just a catchy song and everything, but like that's such an elemental part to any insecurity that I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, no, like the perfect version of this that's in my head and heart is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and is complete, but it's never going to come out that way. And whatever method I use to like Play-Doh Fun Factory extrude that, you know, perfect lump of goodness out into the world is just going to make it ugly and wrong and hurtful to people.
Right.
That's never the intention. It's just always going to happen.
And like, no matter how, like, you can't brute force it. Like, no matter how much you try and clarify, like the damage is already done. Like somebody has already heard, you know, what they wanted to hear, or, you know, the imperfect version of it that they haven't gotten. And so you can never make it better.
Yeah. And it's just like, and that's, you know, if, other than just being misunderstood, that other kind of like grand anxiety that I have are like permanent things,
mm-hmm.
you know, like something that can't be fixed or adjusted, like is, you know, that's always going to be a recipe for misery for me.
Yeah. It's like somebody parked behind you at the party and then they slash their tires. Like,
yeah. And just like, well, now, or just like, you know, it doesn't even have to be that like unrealistic. It could just be like, I went to a party and I didn't drive there. You know, like it just like, oh, I can't take this back. I can't change my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. And that's terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, that's like such an anxiety. And when I say terrifying, there's like, I realize it's not terrifying the same way that like Pennywise is. It's terrifying in a way that causes me a lot of anxiety.
Well, it's like a more prosaic thing, because like you get like hints of it. In your life, like, you know, you'll maybe catch like a silhouette, like out of the corner of your eye of something, like, and just what's weird is I was about to say that this is a terror that you can't laugh off.
Mm-hmm.
But like, think how much of like Larry David Seinfeld or like Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm is entirely about like not wanting to be misunderstood. Like it is.
I don't think he has the same anxiety about it.
Huh.
You know, I think that like kind of the point of because Larry David and Seinfeld, like, and then by extension, like It's Always Sunny, are comedies where the joke is the protagonists are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're bad people. And it'd be like me if I was incapable of feeling that guilt. Like mm-hmm. the humorous situations happen and the humor comes from the audience watching. It's like the emotional equivalent of watching somebody like America's Funniest Home Videos.
Mm-hmm.
Like we can feel that empathy and feel that kind of guilt. So we like watching it happen without consequence to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Like without real consequence. Yeah. Like
it's one of those weird things. Like I'm rewatching The Office now just because I want to have something like pleasant to fall asleep to when I'm falling asleep. That was redundant. I'm sorry. It's very late here. But yeah, like it just most of the time I feel about myself like I feel about Michael Scott when I watch him.
Mm-hmm.
And like that is not a healthy way, but like that is the nightmare version of this. Like, it's just, you know, like being hyper self-aware about somebody who has no self-awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I feel like that most of the time. This is just like, mm-hmm. this is when the walls between, you know,
yeah, it's like
emotions and thoughts are thin, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Being misunderstood, that sucks. Yeah.
Yeah, it is just the worst. And like, it's like, it ends up making you do the thing where like, and I'm sure you've done this before, where you're like, you meet somebody and you say something and then later you interpret that thing to be stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And then you meet them again, like a couple days later, and be like, hey, remember when I said that thing? Of course they fucking don't.
Right.
Like they don't give a shit. It's all just lives in your memory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I had a teacher at PSU once who like, somehow I became Facebook friends
mm-hmm.
with him. I was like a young teacher. Like she was a grad student. And so we're kind of like, you know, contemporary in ages and everything. And then she posted some kind of thing on Facebook and I responded with a little heart. Cause like I do that when I think things are cute and great, you know, for somebody.
Uh-oh.
And then I had this weird, like, oh, you're my teacher. Like I shouldn't have done that. And it was like this weird several days of like self-examination and like, oh, that's inappropriate. And you know, the worst. And then it ended up mm-hmm. like writing an apology, not like handwriting and like delivering it by, you know, messenger or anything, but like writing it on Facebook. And she's like, no, it doesn't matter. And I was just like, oh wait, of course it doesn't.
It's,
you know, like, you know, but I built it up so goddamn much of this idea of being like her having the worst possible interpretation of this. Like I was being a creeper. Yeah. And it was also like coincided with a lot of consciousness about gender stuff.
Right.
So I didn't want to be like, oh, I'm being the nice guy who does like, who's Facebook stalking.
Yeah.
You know, this person.
No, I run into that too, because I throw around hearts like crazy as well. Like,
yeah.
But I guess it just, I don't know. Like, it doesn't mean the same thing. Like, it's like this weird version of like reverse paranoia. But it like, like the DNA that it has in common with that is that you're still the center of it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a level of like, narcissism to it too.
Yeah.
Which is whenever you think that other people are concerned with you. Like there is a narcissism to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the actual answer to almost any of these situations is the other person didn't actually care or think about it.
Yeah, or didn't notice. You know? Yeah.
Didn't notice. Yeah. Like I was thinking about, or somebody on Slack was talking about visiting a beach and feeling embarrassed about stretch marks. And I was like, every time I do that, like I was the guy in high school who like swam with a shirt on,
yeah,
you know, like, but if you think about like the times you've been at a beach and you see like a fat kid playing at the beach, mm-hmm. how much time do you spend thinking about them?
Mm-hmm.
Like less than a second. You know, like you don't care, but in your mind, you're thinking like, I'm going to go there and everyone's just going to be like, whoa, look at that guy.
Well, and that's like, never the case. Like, you're projecting how bad you feel about yourself on other people and assuming that they feel the same way about you that you do.
But where in fact they don't feel, so it's like, but it's not just that. It's not just insecurity, which is like, you know, they're going to feel bad about me. It's also, they're not going to feel anything about you.
Right.
You know, like it's also a little bit of like, I'm the main character of this.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, day at the beach is the name of the story. And I'm definitely the main character at it. When in fact you're not at all, you know, and that's true in so many situations. Like a lot of times, like to this, like teacher, like I didn't think about this, but like this person interacts with like hundreds of people,
mm-hmm.
you know, like why am I the main character of like poetry faux pas, you know, where it like, that's the name of the class. I didn't write her a poem, but like, you know, the, why am I the main character of that? When in fact, like I'm actually don't matter to this person really at all.
Yeah.
You know, and like keeping that kind of thing in mind, I found when I can, you know, I'm not in the world of dreams and can't do this, but when I can actively do that, it helps a lot.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time, nobody gives a shit. 99% of the time, like, you know, if it's like one of your friends, that's great. But then you don't have this problem because you can actually talk to them. Mm-hmm. If it's somebody who you can't actually talk to, they don't care.
Yeah.
Like they don't care. You're not disappointing anybody. You're not like affecting them in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
You know, they don't care.
I mean, like it's just a different flavor. I know I made this reference 2 episodes ago, but like it really is. This is water, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, not everything is a slight against you, you know, like just everybody has their reasons. And like, if you give yourself permission for just a second to not feel bad or to not, you know, or to just take it easy on yourself, you'll realize that like, A, you're not the center of everything. So like, you don't have all this pressure pressing down on you. And also like just it doesn't matter. And I say this as though I'm some kind of sage who's mastered it, when in reality I'm one of the worst people at it that I know. But like, you know, being aware of it doesn't mean you know can do it.
Yeah, it's the difference between thinking something and feeling it.
Yeah,
like you can think that that's the case, but you don't feel it. You know, you don't have internalized it.
Yeah,
like it's more than just like not having the, you know, it not having that it's not having that power too,
mm-hmm.
over other people. Like I think about that the infinite perspective machine thing from Hitchhiker's Guide,
mm-hmm.
and like what a good idea that is. You know, like if everybody just kind of knew how unimportant they were in the grand scheme of things, like whenever I get like a big head about like pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's, I like to think, like, what happens if I went outside and asked the first 1,000 people I ran into about this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I can feel good about stuff I do, but if I start feeling like it's, and you know, this is the positive end. If I start feeling like a big head about it, it's like, no, this doesn't actually, like, nobody gives a shit. Like, it doesn't actually matter, you know?
Well, and by extension, nobody owes you anything for it.
No, totally. Like, none of it, you know, it doesn't, it's, so it's like, it's the positive side of saying nothing matters, which is like historically kind of a nihilistic thing. It doesn't mean, well, you shouldn't do
it, it is precisely a nihilistic thing.
Yeah. But it doesn't, well, I mean, it's, there's a positive side to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't mean you shouldn't do things. It doesn't mean that things aren't great that you do them. It doesn't mean you shouldn't appreciate people, but don't get so wrapped up in yourself. Like, it's not for you to worry about, mm-hmm. you know, I guess is the thing. Like, it's not, you know, people will come at it as they will, but you are probably over or undervaluing yourself at any mm-hmm. given moment.
Yeah.
And it, just letting it kind of sort itself out is the better solution.
Yeah. Well, and there's like so much there's so much like wrapped up in this about like, you know, just like mindfulness kind of things. I know I keep on, you know, hitting on that, but like the thing didn't hurt you. Your feeling about the thing hurt you. So if you can hack that and get around it, then you're fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is such a difficult thing that requires so much attention and so much work that like we all kind of walk around mired up in it.
Yeah. And like the thing that the feeling that hurt you is probably based around either, you know, either you being too hard on yourself or inflating your self-importance.
Yeah.
But very rarely are you like, you know, and not to like undervalue feelings in general, because like,
no, your feelings are real.
It's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's real. It's a real thing you're doing. But if you can find a way to not feel that,
mm-hmm.
you'll, you know, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a negative feeling, like, or if it's something that's unhealthy, you know, it's like a good thing to try to get around it. I'm not talking to you specifically. I'm just saying,
no, just in general, because also as much as I talk about how insecure and like anxious I am, everybody else is insecure and anxious. So it's not a bit, it's not a big fucking deal. Nobody owes you anything for that.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, it's not special.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that whole, there's like philosophies about that stuff that I really hate, but there's an aspect to it. As long as you're humane with it, like that's mm-hmm. kind of works, you know, like this idea, like, oh, you're not a special snowflake. Like, yes, you are, but everybody is.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the takeaway. It's not that no one is special.
Yeah.
It's that everyone is.
Yeah. And as long as you take that idea and apply some modicum of empathy and respect to it, you're probably going to be okay. Like that infuses worth into it. Just like it infuses worth into most things that empathy and respect touch.
Yes. And in closing, bodies are weird. Don't feel weird about your, you know, don't feel that bad about your body. Like, bodies are weird. You know, like I and without, you know, this, obviously I would never say names, but like I dated a girl once who was like so fantastically out of my league.
Mm-hmm.
I thought kind of physically,
mm-hmm.
But she had a small like skin, like deformity issue thing on her body that was like so tiny, right? Like you'd fit it inside a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And was so self-conscious about it, right? So like to her, like to my mind, it was like, oh, this is this person who is just like, you know, amazing looking, and mm-hmm. here I am and I look like a, you know, a sentient pile of mashed potatoes. And like but there's this tiny little thing that I wouldn't even have noticed, you know, that was like so big in her mind because she was overinflating it in this way. Like it just like, it doesn't, our bodies are weird.
Yeah.
You know, it is like, and they're weird for everybody, and like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. And you think about yours the most because you spend the most time in it.
Yeah, you're seeing it all the time. And you're seeing it from weird angles, and you're seeing it in like unflattering situations like all the time and in perfect light and everything like that. Like if you're listening to this, your body's probably fine.
Yeah.
Like don't feel bad about being hefty boy, hefty girl or anything like that. Like
mm-hmm.
everything's fine.
Yep.
That's the takeaway. They're suffering away.
Yeah. And being healthy is good, but feeling better, feeling good is more important. So,
yeah.
So like,
well, healthy, I mean, there's the correlation there. Like,
oh, yeah.
We don't get into that, but like you know, obviously you should be healthy, but also mm-hmm. it's unhealthy. Like if you're hurting yourself emotionally in mm-hmm. order to be healthy physically, you're not doing it, making any progress.
Oh boy. I'm being misunderstood. I was going to go on to say like that starts in a bunch of different places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that went to a weird place.
Yeah, that's what happens when you pop into the Nightmare Creatures. Like, that's what happens when you discuss PS1 era over-the-shoulder brawlers.
Yeah. So I dig it. I would encourage people to go play it if you want to see something from the PS1 era that plays really that plays pretty good, but yeah. Suffers from bad just kind of like overall design.
Yeah. There's some bad design elements, but there's something cool there.
Yeah.
And is noteworthy, and I would like to play it some more. And like I said, I would do it with save states, but I might actually play through it because it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you haven't been turned off by our combination of like, wait, we really hit all the bases. It was just like boring planning, dream talk, therapy. This is like the trio of turnoffs that like people could have. And we did religion a couple episodes ago. So like, if you're listening to this and this bums you out, we might have gotten out of our system. So just there's a silver lining there.
Yeah.
But if you're listening to this and you're not totally turned off and you want to support the show, mm-hmm. You can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and kick us a couple bucks a month. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that would be helpful.
Yep. If you want to get past episodes of our premium shows, you can go to duckfeed.tv/store.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to write us a review on iTunes or leave us a rating, that is great mm-hmm. and greatly appreciated and helps a lot, as does tweeting and blogging and all those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And hopefully there is some value here. This is about as self-conscious as I've felt about an episode in a while.
Nah, I mean, whatever.
At the end. I hope that hopefully there's some value here.
I think so. I think we're going to piss less people off because we didn't take a stand on something people hold dear, like religion. Like, nobody's going to be angry about it. People are just going to think it's weird.
Yeah. I interrupted you to make that joke. And then because it wasn't acknowledged, I wanted to make sure that it was acknowledged that it was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who was listening, that was a joke.
Okay.
So I think you're right.
Yep.
Yeah. And until what do we do next time?
It's a raffle, and it is too early in the month to decide who the raffle winner is, so it is a mystery to everyone.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And raffles are real cool if you want to dictate what we play.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way to do it. Until next time, what should they do?
Who is Zoodog really?
Who is Zoodog really? Who's the Zoodog? And does anyone else actually care about Zoodog? Like, he's always asking if he's a good boy, but everybody doesn't even think about him one way or another.
It doesn't matter if Zoodog lives or dies.
Yes. No, it matters if Zoodog lives, but it also matters if, like, Bank Dog and Amusement Park Dog and City Hall Dog live.
City Hall Dog. You know, I bet City Hall Dog, he puts on a really strong professional face, but at parties, hoo boy.
Yeah, exactly. He's a party dog. Yeah. The idea, it's not that nothing matters, it's that everything matters.